Time now for hour number two of this weekend's big two-hour installment of A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups. Michael Harrison here in the anchor chair. And, of course, we have more Carol Marks interviews for you. Carol Marks is the host and founder of the program. She's one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues, and she is a champion in the battle against ageism. Carol has two interesting interviews coming up. In just a few minutes, she'll be talking with Dr. Martin Blaser, director of the Human Microbiome Program at New York University and author of Missing Microbes, How the Overuse of Antibiotics is Fueling Our Modern Plagues. It's published by Henry Holt and Company. And now, kicking off this hour, here's Carol Marks in conversation with Karen Abbott. She's a New York Times bestselling author and a contributor to Smithsonian Magazine's History Blog. And she's going to talk to Carol about her new book titled, I love this title, listen to this, Liar, Temptress, Soldier, Spy, published by Harper.
Now, I want to hear about the move that you made to Atlanta from Philadelphia in 2001. And, you know, that was a little culture shock. And then you found yourself really stuck in a horrific traffic jam, and you were forced to look at this particular bumper sticker, and what got you interested in writing this book, and what was on that bumper sticker?
Well, the bumper sticker, it was quite a culture shock to move from Philadelphia to the Deep South, and the bumper sticker you're referring to said, "Don't blame me, I voted for Jeff Davis," reference, of course, to the president of the Confederacy, Jefferson Davis. And I was stuck looking at this bumper sticker for about 2 hours in traffic and just started thinking, as I usually, you know, my mind always wanders to, well, what were the women doing? And not just the women, what were the bad women doing? What were the sort of defiant women doing? And that's when I landed on these four Civil War spies.
And, you know, you write about four of them, and two of them are from the South and two are from the North. And what research did you use to find them? Was it hard?
No, I have a background as a journalist, so the research is really the fun part for me, one of the fun parts. And I spent 5 years researching this book. I went to Richmond, I went to D.C., and I went pretty much everywhere the research took me across the country, and some really thrilling discoveries. For example, I found one Confederate spy, Rose Greenhow. Her cipher was in the National Archives, so I actually got to check out her cipher. And Elizabeth Van Loo, one of the Northern spies, her papers are at the New York Public Library. And I actually found some of the death threats she received. This is a Union spy living in Richmond, the Confederate capital, so you can imagine how dangerous her situation was. And she received quite a few death threats, and I found some of them in the New York Public Library. And it was really chilling, you know, chilling for me to sit there and hold these in my hand, and just chilling to imagine how she felt receiving these back in 1864.
And the whole thing about the four spies that you write about is that they were different ages, they came from different backgrounds, and they certainly had different economic status among them, and that's what makes them so interesting. And before we get back to talking a little bit about the two that you just mentioned, because I think they're so interesting, Rose O'Neill Greenhow and Elizabeth Van Loo, I wanted to point out that I couldn't agree with you more when you say what was so amazing that these women were spies was that they really, they went against all the kind of the trends and the rules that they were living against, and they didn't have any of the rights. They couldn't vote. They didn't have any effect on what was going on in politics. Amazing.
Yeah, and it was something they used to their advantage. You know, they exploited the idea of women being the weaker sex. And women it actually used their gender as a sort of physical and psychological disguise, which I found interesting. Physically, you know, they would actually hide dispatches and secret notes and important information in their hair, in their hoop skirts, in their corsets. And psychologically, you know, if anybody accused them of treasonous activity, the usual retort was, how dare you? How dare you accuse me of being capable of such treasonous activity? You know, that I am a defenseless woman. How dare you accuse me of such things? And so they actually exploited the ideas of their gender and quite brilliantly used it to their advantage.
And just as you mentioned that Elizabeth Van Loo lived in Richmond and she was an avowed fighter against slavery, Rose O'Neill Greenhow also lived in Washington and was a spy for the South. And so she was also in a difficult spot.
Absolutely. These were women who were operating right literally under the enemy's nose. Rose O'Neill Greenhow actually became public enemy number one. The famous detective Alan Pinkerton was sent to conduct a stakeout of Rose Greenhow and watched her. She was quite a notorious seductress. Her sources included many high-ranking politicians and generals in the Union generals in the northern government. And, of course, Alan Pinkerton is incensed when he conducts a stakeout on Rose O'Neill Greenhow and sees her canoodling with the with the Union captain and poring over Union maps and fortifications. And this is something that becomes a really interesting cat-and-mouse game throughout the book.
And but still she was held in such esteem even after Pinkerton arrested her and she went to prison and sent back south that President Davis actually appointed her to be an emissary in Europe, so she became a hero in a way.
Yeah, I really love that part of the book. I mean, this was unprecedented. A sitting president of American country, if you want to call the South a separate American country at the time, which they considered themselves to be, sending a woman to lobby for his government, to lobby on behalf of his government, and her goal was to try to get Europe, particularly England and France, to recognize the Confederacy to support the South. And you can imagine that Rose Greenhow, who did not, you know, shy away from her voicing her opinions, had quite a few adventures over there too.
I bet. And Elizabeth Van Loo, I mean, I just can't believe that she was able to get a trusted servant.
Yeah.
And a free slave to work in the White House Confederate place where they governed from and bring back a lot of information from there. I mean, that was quite something.
I think that was probably the most daring act of the entire book and that any of the spies had completed. You know, Verena Davis, who was the Confederate First Lady, Jefferson Davis's wife, put out notice that she needed help. She needed to hire new servants for the Confederate White House in Richmond. And Elizabeth heard this and said, I have somebody for you. She's not very smart. She fumbles in the kitchen, but she'll serve your purposes. She's a, you know, good enough servant. And she sends over Mary Jane Bowser. Now, Mary Jane Bowser was born into the Van Loo family, and Elizabeth freed her when she was very young and sent her to be educated. And, of course, nobody knows that Mary Jane Bowser is not only literate but highly educated and gifted with a photographic memory. So while she's dusting Jefferson Davis's desk and cleaning up the Davis children's toys in the nursery, she's also sneaking peeks at the confidential letters on Jefferson Davis's desk and looking at the maps and overhearing his confidential conversations with his Confederate advisors and reporting all of it back to Elizabeth for her Union spy ring. So really, really daring espionage work.
And when it comes to the women spies in your book, one of them was Emma Emmons. And
yeah.
But she lived under the disguise of a man, Frank Thompson, before the war. And then she enlisted in the Union Army as a soldier spy, and she really took part in some of the bloodiest battles of the war. Guess he was a medic. Were you surprised that in the Civil War, 400 women enlisted as men?
Yeah.
And why do you think that was?
Well, that was one of the most surprising things. You know, as you said, 400 women disguised themselves as men and fought for either the North or the South. And I, like a lot of them, Emma Edmonds had been living as a man for 2 years before the war. She was calling herself Frank Thompson, and that's the name she also used when she enlisted. And she was escaping a brutal home life. Her abusive father had wanted to arrange a marriage for her, and she wanted no part of this. Emma wanted a life of adventure. So she cut off her hair and bound her breasts and traded her dress for a man's suit and enlisted. And you know, you have to wonder how they got away with this. And
yes.
I came to the conclusion that these women mostly got away with it because nobody had any idea what they would look like wearing pants. You know, people were so used to seeing women's bodies in these exaggerated shapes with corsets and crinolines that the very idea of a woman in pants was so unfathomable that it didn't even occur to them, even when it was right in front of their face. And, of course, Emma also goes on to have quite a few adventures in the war and espionage adventures. And on the battlefield, she witnessed some of the bloodiest battles of the war.
Now, one of the most important things that I learned from your book, and I never thought about it, were some of the ways the Civil War dramatically changed women's lives. What were some of them?
Well, I think the primary one, and that's a good question, I think the primary one was that people started viewing women as capable of this sort of behavior. You know, it was unthinkable before the war began. Women were victims of war. They weren't perpetrators of war. And so there was the idea of women are not only capable of treasonous activity, but of executing it more deftly than men. And it was something that had not occurred to anybody. And there was one Lincoln official who actually had a great quote, and he said, what are we going to do with these fashionable women spies? And they really just didn't know how to handle these women, and the women were redefining their roles and stepping up and being outspoken and brazen in ways that they hadn't before the war.
And really, a lot of them were forced into going out to work for the first time because many of their husbands came back wounded. And do you think that that really helped lead to the suffrage movement in this country?
Oh, absolutely. Women definitely had to redefine their whole role of family life, the idea of romantic life. There were 60,000 widows left. And women who didn't really have a hope of remarrying. And so that whole idea that they were going to be, you know, slave mistresses taken care of by their husbands on the plantation was gone. And as you said, women had to go out in the workforce in unprecedented numbers, and many of them that led to jobs and to suffrage work and sort of carving a path in the way of women's rights that would lead into the next century.
That's Karen Abbott in conversation with Carol Marx. Her book is titled Liar, Temptress, Soldier, Spy, published by Harper. Carol Marx returns in conversation with the director of the Human Microbiome Program at New York University, talking about those missing microbes and how our misuse of antibiotics is fueling the plagues around the world. That's next when A Touch of Gray continues.
Did you know an estimated 16 million Americans suffer from a chronic inflammatory facial condition called rosacea, and most of them don't know it? Often mistaken for acne, there are many signs and symptoms of rosacea besides facial redness, pimples, and visible blood vessels. Other symptoms may include burning, stinging, swelling, and even enlargement of the nose. Rosacea can also affect the eyes, causing a bloodshot appearance and irritation that could lead to vision loss. Any one of these signs and symptoms can mean rosacea, and without medical help, it can become increasingly severe and wreak havoc on your personal and professional life. Rosacea typically appears any time after age 30. So if you experience any sign of rosacea, see a dermatologist for diagnosis and treatment. Or for more information, visit the National Rosacea Society at rosacea.org.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
Continuing with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, Michael Harrison in the anchor chair. Here's Carol Marx in conversation with Dr. Martin Blaser, director of the Human Microbiome Program at New York University and author of a book titled Missing Microbes, How the Overuse of Antibiotics is Fueling Our Modern Plagues, published by Henry Holt & Company.
When it comes to the human microbiome, you've written that every human being is host to around a trillion bacterial cells, outnumbering their human cells 10 to 1. And in fact, 90% of all the cells in the body and outside of our body aren't human at all. So they're microorganisms. So what is a microorganism? Why do the scientists call the bacteria in our bodies the microbiome?
So microorganisms are forms of life that are too small to be seen by the naked eye. They can usually be seen under the microscope, and they include things like bacteria and fungi, very small cell organisms. And as you say, most of the cells in the human body are in fact microbes. In fact, they outnumber us 10 to 1, as you've said. It's actually 100 trillion, not 1 trillion, but 100 trillion
wow.
cells are microbes. And these are ancestral. We got a lot of them from our moms, and they got them from their moms, and so on and so forth. It goes all the way back in time.
Now, here's something that really floored me. The size of our microbiome. So what is it? How big is it?
Well, again, the bacterial cells are much smaller than our human cells. So it's been estimated it weighs about 3 or 4 pounds, about the size of our brain. And we think of it as another organ of the body because it's doing a lot of work for us. the microbiome helps train our immune system. It helps us digest food. It makes vitamins for us. It helps defend us against invaders.
So it does so many helpful things. Now, you have just, said that we get our microorganisms from our mother. And why, then, are the first years in children's lives so important when it came to keeping ourselves in our body living together peacefully?
Right. Well, I'm going to answer your question by saying, first, I'm a member of the AARP, and I'm happy to be talking to members of AARP because they have children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren. And this book is especially important about them because during the early years of life, that's when babies are developing, it's when children are developing, and we want them to develop in good, healthy ways. And it turns out that the microbes that we get early in life are aiding in that development. And my whole concern, and that's why I called it missing microbes, is that something has gone askew, and our kids aren't getting all the right microbes that they used to get, or they're getting them and they're losing them because of things like very common treatment with antibiotics.
You know, things like earaches.
Well, right. So kids very commonly have ear infections, and our doctors are giving children antibiotics for these ear infections. But we know that about 80% of the ear infections are due to viruses, and antibiotics don't even work. But both the doctors and the patients think that the antibiotics don't have any biological cost. So they're prescribing antibiotics tremendously. The average child in the United States is probably getting 4 courses of antibiotics in the first 2-3 years of life. That's across every child in the U.S. Some kids are even getting more. By the age of 10, the average child in the U.S. has gotten 10 courses of antibiotics. By the time they're 20, they've gotten 17 courses of antibiotics. Now, in contrast, in Sweden, they're using 40% of the antibiotics we're using. That means that 60% of the antibiotics we're using are unnecessary. And this is happening at childhood, young adulthood, at older adulthood. The Swedes, who are just as healthy as we are, and maybe even healthier, are using much less antibiotics.
And I guess they're doing, they've really gone on a campaign in France to lower the use of antibiotics, something that we are sorely not doing.
Yeah, well, we're starting there. We're starting there, but we have a long way to go. And again, the reason the French are doing this is that they use a tremendous amount of antibiotics too. And if antibiotics were free, then there'd be no problem. But we and others are finding that there are more and more costs to antibiotics, which is why I wrote Microbes, to inform the general public about this, that they're not free, and that my concern is that many of the diseases that are starting in childhood, like obesity and juvenile diabetes and allergies and food allergies, these are all being fueled by the changes in our microbiome, our children's microbiome, driven by all this antibiotic use.
Now, being a scientist, how do we know we're losing some of these healthy microbes? I mean, has there been any research done, and why is diversity in our bacteria so important?
Well, we know that forests and grasslands that are diverse are very hardy. They can withstand all kinds of changes in the environment. They can withstand invaders of different kinds of species. But when you lose diversity, you lose that kind of resilience. And so that's one of my concerns, is that we'll lose resilience. But there have been scientific studies now that have looked at the diversity in the intestinal tract of the microbes that are present, and we have much less diversity than people in developing countries. And it's been estimated that we've lost 30 to 40% of our diversity already. It's kind of been silent under the radar screen. But we're concerned that this is a little risk for diseases that sometimes elderly people get, such as C. diff infections involving their intestines.
And there's another really frightening superbug out there called MRSA, and you can pronounce it for me, but why is this bacteria so scary, and what can we do to protect ourselves against it?
Well, this bacteria, MRSA, or methicillin-resistant Staph aureus, is an antibiotic resistant bacteria. It arose in hospitals where they use a lot of antibiotics, and it can cause very, very serious infections. And what's important is that in recent years, it's not just in people who are in hospitals. It's spread out into the community. So the question is, why is this organism spreading? And my idea is that it's because we've lost some of our natural barriers against these bacteria. The loss of diversity, in fact, may be playing a role.
Now, what's so helpful about your book, Dr. Blaser, is the fact that not only do you spell out the problems we're having maintaining the number of good bacteria we need, but you also offer some common sense solutions. And so can you tell us about some of the constructive things that we need to implement in our country?
Well, the first thing is that, as I said, people who have mild illnesses should not be taking antibiotics. They should not say, doctor, please give me an antibiotic, because they're not without cost. And this is people at really all different ages. Another thing for parents, if the doctor says your child doesn't need an antibiotic, they shouldn't feel deprived. They should insist, we want an antibiotic. Another point that I want to bring up is that the rate of cesarean sections has just gone up dramatically in recent years. It used to be 10% of all births were by C-section. Most recently, it was a third of all babies born in the United States were by C-section. Again, everybody's thinking that C-sections are free biologically, but we have evidence that that transfer of microbes to moms from moms to babies is altered when there are C-sections. So these are some issues. Another issue is the hand sanitizers that everybody seems to be using. We're using it by the tens of millions of applications every day. There isn't really any evidence that this is any good for us. And my concern is that it's removing the good bacteria, not just the bad bacteria. And in the long run, I don't know whether we're doing more good or more harm. When it's flu season, these hand sanitizers are important. When people are in hospitals, they're important. But for the other 95% of the times, they may be doing more harm than good.
That's Dr. Martin Blaser in conversation with Carol Marks. His book is titled Missing Microbes, How the Overuse of Antibiotics is Fueling Our Modern Plagues, published by Henry Holt and Company. Richard Neer joins us next when A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on matchingdonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. Matchingdonors.com improves those odds by finding living, altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to matchingdonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's matchingdonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security webpages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
This is a Driving Today Minute. Even though high gasoline prices have moderated somewhat, they're still quite high. It just makes good sense to do what you can do to reduce your fuel costs. The Alliance to Save Energy suggests a few easy things you can do.
Keep your car properly tuned up and change the air filter regularly, both to save gas and protect your engine. Curtail aggressive driving. According to the U.S. Department of Energy, speeding, rapid acceleration, and hard braking waste gas and curb mileage by as much as 33% at highway speeds.
So nix the jackrabbit starts and opt instead for slow acceleration from a dead stop. Slow down. The DOE says each mile per hour you drive over 60 is like paying an extra 10 cents per gallon. Inflate tires to the proper pressure. This will increase fuel economy and make tires safer and extend their life.
This Driving Today Minute is brought to you by Bridgestone Firestone Tires. You can get more information like this at drivingtoday.com or by visiting our partners such as autobytel.com, motorsportsforum.com, and more.
You're listening to A Touch of Gray. Check out our website at atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E. That's atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare-only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare-only.
Engine.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to godirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do, and I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marks offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation's struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marks is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
If you plan to apply for Social Security disability benefits, there are things you can do to help speed up the usual 3 to 5 month wait for a decision. The more information you provide up front, the less time it'll take us to obtain the needed evidence, and the faster the decision can be made. Information like medical records or documentation, the names, addresses, and phone numbers of your doctors and medical facilities, information on your past employment, and more. To be prepared, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/disability and select Disability Starter Kits.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and we're joined for the rest of the way by our senior correspondent, Richard Neer, who just moments from now will be talking with Jay McInerney, executive director of Patients and Physicians for RX Access, and they're going to discuss how major cuts in prescription coverage will harm the doctor-patient relationship. Richard, you're going to be talking to him in a few minutes. At least you will be on the air. You've already had the interview. Is this something that we shall look forward to on the edge of our seats?
Well, like most having to do with the healthcare system, it is very confusing. And for those who don't think it's a serious problem, those are people who haven't had to access it. But basically, if your doctor gives you a prescription, it has to pass through the insurance company. And they have to say yay or nay. And the insurance company may say, well, we've got a generic. And the generic may or may not be as good as the original. And, of course, you have the drug companies pushing their originals with the patents and everything else. So you've got this hodgepodge of information. And instead of the doctor making the direct call as to what kind of medication you're getting the insurance company in the middle, sometimes overruling the doctor. And that in a lot of cases, they're going by a schedule, something that they see. Okay, for this particular illness, this is the particular drug we recommend, as opposed to the doctor who says, yes, they have this illness, but there's a variation on it, and they need something else. So they're going in kind of on a one-size-fits-all versus the doctor who knows your individual needs.
Not to mention, in some cases, they're just saying, no, we don't cover that. And then you have to go back to the doctor, and then you have to have the doctor write a letter and go to trouble and go to bat for you and contact the insurance company. And I'll bet you a lot of people are saying, eh, the hell with it. I don't need the drug. And as a result, not taking it. Because
I can tell you that my wife just almost went through that thing with an inhaler that the doctor recommended. The insurance company said, we're not sure. And instead of getting it right away, it took days before she was able to get it.
Mm-hmm. And perhaps she needed it. But if it were on the edge, she might have said, eh, the heck with it. And and that would be even worse. Very interesting indeed. Quick break. And we're going to hear your conversation with the guest. And then we will talk again and wrap up the program. Richard Neer is with us. I'm Michael Harrison, and you're plugged into A Touch of Gray.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on MatchingDonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. MatchingDonors.com improves those odds by finding living altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to MatchingDonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's MatchingDonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security web pages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
Hi, this is Morgan Freeman. Has anyone ever said, you are the picture of health? You look healthy, you feel fine, but that may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Since it doesn't always cause symptoms, you may not know you have it. The only way to know is by getting screened. Screening can find precancerous polyps, so they can be removed before they turn into cancer. This is one cancer you can prevent. Plus, screening can find colorectal cancer at an early stage when the chance for a full recovery is very high. Talk with your doctor and get tested for colorectal cancer. Medicare and many insurance plans help pay for screening. Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and now here, as promised, is Richard Neer in conversation with Jay McInerney. He's the executive director of Patients and Physicians for Rx Access, and he's going to talk about how major cuts in prescription coverage will harm the doctor-patient relationship.
Tell us about the organization. What is Rx Access?
Richard, thank you for having me on, first of all. I really appreciate it. Rx Access, this organization, is focused on patient access and ultimately physician access to a certain type or a certain class of medications called compounded medications, and those are medications that are ordered by a doctor that are customized for an individual patient, generally for patients who can't tolerate or can't metabolize the big box commercially available medications, the pills you see from Pfizer and Merck and the large pharmaceutical manufacturers. The compounds affect about are needed by about 5% of our population, and is very important when you speak of a touch of gray. It's actually very important for some of our older generation, some of whom, for one reason or another, be it that they just can't tolerate the pills anymore, maybe the dosage is wrong on the commercially available medications, or potentially the dosage form, needing it in a topical or some other form. If you receive those things, you're receiving a compound, and that is the class of medications that is right now under attack and is really a dangerous situation for our patients.
Now, Express Scripts is a large-scale provider of these substances, and they notified some patients when starting this past July 15th that there would be changes?
Yes. Express Scripts is the largest pharmacy benefit manager in the country. They process, at least according to their numbers, one of every two prescriptions in the country. Now, a pharmacy benefit manager, as the name implies, is a company that manages the pharmacy benefit for insurance plans. And so, ultimately, if you need a medication and you have insurance, then it's a one in two chance that Express Scripts is the company that will manage the payment for that medication and set the rules a lot of times on the payment for that medication. Express Scripts in July, very quietly, in the middle of a benefit year, which is really tough on patients because they can't react in the middle of a benefit year a lot of times, quietly began to cut coverage on these compounded medications. Currently, according to Express Scripts' own numbers, they've cut 1,000 ingredients that are included in compounded medications, ultimately gutting the entire class of medications as it deals with patient access, which again, it forces patients into a very tough situation in getting the medication that they actually need.
Now, Jay, is there any kind of appeals process? In other words, can you have your doctor contact them and say that this particular compound is necessary given reactions to the generic or the other drugs that they prescribe, or is it pretty much what they say goes?
Well, it's what they say and what they do are two totally different things, unfortunately. We actually have a mother with who has reached out to us and is currently in the process of giving us information for updating our members on our website and other situations. But she has two sons with a mitochondrial disease. There are no and infant sons at that. There are no commercially available medications that work for her children, and her children are actually at risk of death without getting the compounded medication for which they've become accustomed and have really reacted well from a treatment perspective. Express Scripts sent that mom a letter denying the those medications, denying payment for those medications. Her specialist actually appealed and assisted in the appeal to attempt to get the children the medication, and Express Scripts, again, denied that appeal. Now, if you look at what Express Scripts says online and in their stakeholder calls, they say anyone who needs a compounded medication will get it. But words and actions have proven to be two different things for that company, unfortunately.
Now, is this a complicated process to file an appeal? It sounds to me what you're saying, Jay, is that they're kind of judge and jury, that you file the appeal and they can say yes, they can say no, based on their own information, and there's no impartial arbiter there in between to make those calls.
You hit the nail on the head. Unfortunately, Express Scripts, and this is a manager for insurance companies, is ultimately making clinical decisions on behalf of patients. They're stepping into the shoes, as you've seen. You look at our website and some of the materials we've put out, they're hijacking that doctor-patient relationship. They're attempting to step into the shoes of doctors and tell doctors what patients should and shouldn't have. And it's a very dangerous situation. To go back to your original question, though, yes, the appeal is something that's not very well defined through Express Scripts information, but from what we have seen and the information we have, it's incredibly difficult.
Yeah, it sounds like, and we've had, you know, personal experience. My wife is on a certain medication, and they switched her over to a generic copy of it, which at this point, thankfully, seems to be working, but it's not exactly the same thing. And it is certainly cheaper for them to provide, but, you know, there may be benefits to the other one that, you know, aren't being given.
And unfortunately, we see ourselves in a very similar situation as what you're dealing with your wife, and that is a lot of time, what we're seeing is insurance companies making choices on behalf of patients that, or in this case, pharmacy benefit managers making choices on behalf of patients that aren't good for the patients. Ultimately, not allowing patients to treat in the most effective way. And whether that ultimately reduced costs over time is something that I think is a real fallacy in what they're doing. You know, you look at folks who could get one medication that actually works that treats their condition, or they can get a medication that doesn't work or doesn't fully work that doesn't treat their condition, and ultimately the insurance company and the pharmacy benefit manager are going to spend more money attempting to treat the patient with ineffective medications versus the spend that they may use on a medication that is actually appropriate for the patient's condition or disease.
And I imagine that inappropriate medication might lead to hospital stays, which, of course, are much more expensive than the medication one would think. Does the Affordable Care Act address this particular segment at all, or is that something beyond its purview?
In some ways, yes, not directly. And if on the phone there are any benefits managers for employers or otherwise who handle the employer insurance plans, it's something that they should really pay attention to. The Affordable Care Act gives plans, insurance plans, many rights that exist only if the plan does not make a substantial change in a beneficiary's benefits. And in this situation, from the information we have, at least, Express Scripts and other PBMs, you know, we're looking at OptumRx through United Healthcare, Catamaran, who's the second largest pharmacy benefit manager in the world, or in the country, excuse me, Harvard Pilgrim. You have a lot of companies making cuts in different ways, but what these companies are doing, they're taking away an entire class of medication, and by doing that, are actually putting the plans at risk under the Affordable Care Act. And so it's not information that's being put forward by the pharmacy benefit managers. Unfortunately, we and some other advocacy groups are the ones really bringing this to the forefront, but there are some real risks for plans in this situation as well.
Jay, I may be throwing you a curveball here outside of your area of expertise, but are there any other countries, perhaps, that have a model that works better than this?
As it deals with the reimbursement model, it's something of which I'm not overly familiar. Compounding and customization of medications is very popular in Europe. Some very large companies who have begun to set up in the United States are experts in that area of medication. So it's been in Europe for a long time, and I know it works, both from personal experience and through my experience with this organization. But that's something that I could certainly look into and get back with you with some information. I'd be happy to do so.
Jay, is there a website or a place where we can get additional information on this?
Absolutely. The website for our organization is saverxaccess.org. Again, saverxaccess, that's ACCESS.org. And on that website, your listeners will find an abundance of information, FAQs and information sheets, actual letters that they may print off and sign and send to their benefits managers, either through an employer or outside of the employer setting, letters that you can send to your senators and representatives. A lot of information about what's going on and how this ultimately affects hundreds of thousands of patients directly. The Express Scripts cuts alone immediately affected 600,000 patients. But ultimately, if you look at what all the pharmacy benefit managers are doing across the board, you're looking at millions of patients who who are now having their access to medications restricted.
Jay McInerney in conversation with our senior correspondent, Richard Neer. And if you'd like more information about RX Access, go to saverxaccess.org. That's saverxaccess.org. Richard Neer returns for some final words of wisdom and interest. That's next when A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups, continues in a moment.
You're age 65, and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/MedicareOnly. That's socialsecurity.gov/MedicareOnly.
Carol Marx is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marx offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marx is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
She's conquered some of the most challenging ski courses anywhere, but with only one leg, the odds were against her even walking.
The growth was stunted in my right leg when I was born, and the doctors told my mother we needed to amputate when I was 5 years old.
Bonnie was helped at a Shriners Hospital, one of a network of 22 hospitals helping kids throughout North America. Shriners Hospitals provide world-class orthopedic and burn medical care, and they offer that care totally free of charge.
The care and treatment the Shriners gave me was a gift. It wasn't just about learning to walk. They helped me to believe in myself.
There's a Shriners Hospital helping kids from this area realize their dreams.
If I went back to the Shriners Hospital and talked to the nurses and doctors, I would say thank you. Thank you for making my dreams come true.
If you know a child they could help, call 1-800-237-5055. Shriners, giving help and hope to kids for over 80 years.
Engine.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to GoDirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do, and I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Continuing now with A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups, I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and as promised, we continue our conversation right to the very last drop of this hour with our senior correspondent, Richard Neer. So, Richard, let's put on your baseball hat or your sports hat. Of course, you're a leading sports talk show host amongst your many different areas of verbal and spoken word discipline. I gotta make a confession to you. I've come to the conclusion that I am a fair weather fan. I don't like following losing teams.
I came to that conclusion about you a long time.
I just like winners. Now, as a man who understands the psychology of the sports fan, is there something wrong with me? I'm a good friend. I stick with people through thick and thin. Right. But when it comes to my allegiance to a team, like this year, the Red Sox. I haven't watched one Red Sox game. Last year, hey, they're great. I've been following the Patriots for 15 years. They're having a shaky start. I don't even want to watch them. Should I feel embarrassed about that, or is that a mark of my valuable time.
It basically shows that you are not a true fan in the sense of fanatic, because you're a bandwagon jumper. You get on the team when they're winning, and you abandon them when they're losing. And it's like fandom is like a marriage. You know, you've got to be devoted no matter what happens, the good, the bad, the ugly, whatever happens, you got to be there.
Who says? Why? If you eat at a restaurant all the time and you enjoy the food and you go there, then all of a sudden the food's not as good, and all of a sudden it costs more, and the food is less, and they have smaller portions, and the service isn't good. Why do you have to be loyal? Aren't we customers of entertainment as opposed to devoted to this team like a marriage? That whole thing sounds to me like a sick relationship. I see myself as I'm a patron of the arts.
It is a sick relationship. But see, if you watch fans, people who are out there in 0-degree weather with no shirts on, painting their bodies their team colors, or wearing these outrageous get-ups, or paying, for example, and Derek Jeter had a game-worn sock in his final game. They're selling it for $400 for a sock. So you have to be a little nuts to be a fan, and that's why these sporting entities take such advantage of us, charge us these outrageous prices, and toy with our heartstrings all the time, because we do have this blind loyalty to, as Seinfeld said, the laundry.
What do you mean, us? What, you wouldn't pay outrageous amounts of money to go see a team, would you?
No, I wouldn't.
Okay. I have done it on occasion, but usually because it's a gift, or I wanted to give somebody who really would find it interesting a great time. I personally would not spend the kind of money they charge to see sporting events for myself.
Well, how about concert tickets now, where it's $250 to get a good seat to see the Eagles or a band like that? And as much as I may love that band, I'm not going to spend that kind of money just to spend two hours watching them from a distance.
Because I don't love them that much. And that's what it comes down to. It's how much do you love them?
Yeah.
And why do you have to love them? In other words, isn't it enough to say, hey, you know, these guys are a damn good team. I enjoy watching them. And because they give us the excitement of a payoff where the home team wins 60, 70, 80% of the time, this is something worth my investment, not just of money, but of something even more precious than money, and that's time. And even more precious than time, emotional connection. But to suffer, the long-suffering Chicago Cubs fans, you hear stuff like, why? Why would anybody choose to be a long-suffering fan?
Because you are in a bonded relationship with the other fans. People want to be part of a group, and if you can say, hey, I'm a Mets fan.
I'm a member of a loser group.
Well, even if it's a loser group,
gotcha.
it's, you share something with them. You share the
interesting
pain. I feel your pain.
Interesting stuff. Okay, we got to close up the program. Thank you, Richard Neer. Thank you, Stephen J.J. Wiseman. Thank you, Kevin Casey. And thank you, Beverly Santinello on the front line, our producer. And thank you, Carol Marks, the host of the program. On behalf of all of us, I'm Michael Harrison, inviting you to join us next weekend right here for another two-hour episode of Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups.